Hello, this is Donna, and for the next hour, I'll be reading from the weekend edition of the Post Standard on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. In headlines today, Burn Dairy makes a big bet on high-protein milk by Renee Fox. For years, the story of milk was about decline. Americans drank less of it. Shoppers experimented with almond, oat, and soy alternatives. Dairy companies search for ways to adapt. Now, one central New York dairy is betting on the latest milk craze, high protein. Burn Dairy is spending about $120 million to expand its Cortlandville plant and increase production of ultra-filtered milk, a higher protein drink that's rising in popularity. Health and food trends are fueling that growth, especially as high protein diets and weight loss drugs become more popular and accessible. 1 in 10 adults nationwide is using GLP-1 medications, according to the Gallup Press. For Burn, that demand has become impossible to ignore. What began as a new product offering has become the largest investment in the company's 93-year history, says Dan Wood, Burn's chief strategy officer. Consumer demand for ultra-filtered milk is outpacing the demand for conventional fluid milk, Wood said. This product would really allow us to ramp up our production. To satisfy that thirst, Burn is adding dozens of jobs and doubling the Cortland County's plant size. While the expansion is to be completed later this year, Burn will be able to process twice as much milk, up to 40 million gallons a year, Wood said. Ultra-filtered milk provides consumers with what they want now: more protein, less sugar, and less lactose. Founded in 1933 during the Great Depression, Burn Dairy started delivering milk by horse-drawn wagons. It's grown into a major regional processor and retailer with 1,400 workers, now run by a fourth generation of the Burn family. They produce milk, cream, and ice cream for retailers such as Wegmans, Walmart, and Tops across the country from its production plants and ice cream center in central New York. The company also operates more than 70 convenience stores and gas stations across New York State. In other headlines, District Attorney Fitzpatrick mulls reversing his course and running again by Ann Hayes. When Onondaga County District Attorney William Fitzpatrick was reelected for his ninth term in 2023, he said it was his last hurrah. Now, with more than just a year before his seat is up again, he has changed his mind and leaning toward running for a 10th term. He has yet to make a final decision on whether to launch another campaign, he said in an interview. He has been district attorney for 35 years. If elected, he could serve 40 years, tying the former Dutchess County District Attorney William Grady's historic tenure. Fitzpatrick, 73, said he still has not reached the point of physical or mental exhaustion that would force him to give up the job that has become part of him. Staying too long is the worst decision a person can make. I just don't get that sense right now. Fitzpatrick sat down with the Post Standard Syracuse.com last week to discuss his plans. He has dozens of framed photos of loved ones, past presidents, and career accolades in his office. His love of sports is also apparent, with Syracuse, Brooklyn Dodgers, and New York State Yankees material scattered throughout his room. In other local headlines, a city quest for a new municipal dog shelter has finally landed on a site, from Jeremy Boyer. Syracuse officials have a new site in mind just beyond its borders to locate a much-discussed city dog shelter. The city is in negotiations to purchase a warehouse-slash-office building on Burnett Avenue in the village of East Syracuse, across from the Lotte Corporation, the pharmaceutical manufacturing facility. After reversing course on a $2.5 million plan proposed in 2025 to build a shelter in the Inner Harbor neighborhood, the city has been exploring sites for a facility to help address the city's growing stray dog problem. The 1,400-square-foot building at 3614 Burnett Ave could offer the solution. Mayor Sharon Owens' administration is seeking approval from the Syracuse Common Council to get appraisal on the property, which includes four small adjacent parcels. The administration is not publicly discussing the potential acquisition beyond that appraisal request. At a meeting at the Greater Strathmore Neighborhoods Association last week, Owens confirmed that a new site is close to being finalized. Owens said the city needs its own shelter to better handle the growing number of stray dogs in Syracuse. She said she and other officials recently toured a property they believe would work, but were not ready to publicly identify it because plans could still change. Syracuse is also under pressure to get a permanent shelter established because of state laws. City Auditor Alexander Marion issued a spring report on the city's struggle with stray dogs and said the city is falling behind in compliance with the state's companion animal care standards and is at risk for state sanctions. In Madison County headlines, Barack Obama is set to visit Colgate University in September. Former President Barack Obama will stop by a Central New York University during Parents Weekend in September. Colgate University will host Obama for a special conversation at 6:30 p.m. September 18th, according to a news release. Obama will speak about leadership, public service, citizenship, and the responsibilities the next generation holds. Information about tickets will be released in the following weeks at the Colgate's Family Weekend website. Obama visited Hamilton College in 2025 as part of the college's speaker series. There, he voiced concerns about free speech attacks on universities and law firms. Colgate University's event with Obama will be sponsored by the Kirshner Family Series Global Leaders Foundation. Previous Kirshner Family Series speakers include Nobel Peace Prize-winning journalist Maria Ressa, former President Joe Biden, and the Dalai Lama. Biden also paid a visit to Central New York recently. Syracuse University commissioned a portrait to hang in the College of Law, where he attended law school. Biden came to Syracuse for the portrait unveiling in April. Story by Emmeline Muzzy. A key Central New York water source is aging at an alarming rate. Story by Steve Featherstone. Boaters on Atisco Lake have been navigating around a new obstacle this summer, a 5-foot, 700-pound research and monitoring buoy bobbing smack in the middle of the lake. Installed by Upstate Freshwater Institute in June, the faded yellow buoy looks a bit like an old ATM machine set adrift, sporting an antenna and a solar panel. The buoy measures water quality conditions in the lake's water columns, then beams that data back to UFI's headquarters in Syracuse twice a day. Atisco Lake residents and conservationists say the buoy is long overdue for a high-profile lake that every day supplies clean drinking water to hundreds of thousands of people across central New York. The Onondaga County Water Authority estimates 44% of drinking water flowing through its pipes last year came from Atisco Lake. Skaney Atlas Lake, by comparison, contributed merely 3%. More than half of the region's water supply actually comes from Lake Ontario. Craig Erickson, a legislator for Onondaga County's 6th District, which borders Atisco Lake and includes Marcellus, Skaney Atlas, Spafford, and parts of Camillus, helped secure the $64,000 from the county to fund two seasons of buoy data collection. Erickson says that the figure represents a relative amount of money, given the lake's status as a critical body of water. The lake has ecological challenges, he says, and there historically has been a lack of data folks need to understand those challenges and to address them. In other local news, an HIV/AIDS health advocate who had touched countless numbers of lives had passed away this week. When diagnosed with ALS, Will Murtaugh started advocating for people with that disease, too. Story by Greta Stuckey. Whether he was raising money for HIV services, organizing an ALS fundraiser, or growing the game of tennis, William Will Murtaugh had a way of bringing people together for causes he believed in. "I want to help people," Murtaugh once told his husband Bill Lauer when asked why he stayed in nonprofit work despite opportunities to earn more elsewhere. "Helping people is more important to me than money," Lauer recalled him saying. That philosophy defined Murtaugh's life. Long before he was diagnosed with ALS, Murtaugh had dedicated his career to improving the lives of people living with chronic illnesses. Over nearly three decades, he helped transform what is now ACR Health into one of Central New York's leading nonprofit organizations, advocating for people living with HIV/AIDS and other chronic illnesses. When ALS became his own battle about 5 years ago, his family said he faced that disease with the same determination that had defined the rest of his life. "He handled it with grace and dignity," said Lauer, his husband of 31 years. "He never once said, 'I hate this,' and he never complained." Murtaugh, 62, died July 24th in a Syracuse home. Those who knew him say his legacy extends far beyond the nonprofit he helped grow or the championships he won on the tennis court. Instead, they remember the lives he changed. "He was extremely kind and generous beyond belief," said his sister, Kathleen Murtaugh. "He always made people feel heard and seen. A life well lived." Another story from Steve Featherstone. More than a place to walk your dog, a city park receives international recognition. When Stephen Harris became chief arborist for the city of Syracuse in 2010, the James Pass Arboretum, a nearly 100-year-old park in the city's Tipperary Hill neighborhood, didn't quite live up to its title as an arboretum. At that time, it seems that James Pass management was mostly about tree removals. It didn't seem like there was much proactive management or additions to the arboretum leading up to that. But thanks to recent improvements, James Pass Arboretum is now an internationally recognized arboretum accredited through ARBNet, an online community of professionals dedicated to the planting, study, and conservation of trees, according to the organization's website. In fact, James Pass is the city's only official arboretum. The Department of Parks, Recreation, and Youth Programs says it recently achieved ARBNet's Level 1 accreditation by meeting certain criteria, including creating an improvement plan, organizing a government group, designing an arboretum designating an arboretum manager, holding at least one tree-related outreach or education program per year, and labeling a collection of at least 25 varieties of woody plants. The accreditation confirms significant progress to the Parks Department it has made in implementing Phase 1 of the James Pass Arboretum Improvement Plan. Story from Riley Kirk: Onondaga County's term limit mess keeps getting messier. Ryan McMahon wanted to clear the confusion, but he may have just added to it. In his latest effort to mop up an embarrassing mess on the local term limit law, the county executive floated a solution Tuesday that caught local officials by surprise and left lawmakers and lawmakers scrambling to determine its legality. McMahon proposed putting dueling term limits laws on the ballot in 2027. One would install a 3-term limit for the executive and comptroller, the other 4 terms. If voters approve both, the one with the most votes would win. Legislative leaders from both parties said they were caught flat-footed by McMahon's proposal, emailed NMIS to media and government officials just 47 minutes before the legislature met to discuss legal options. One election commissioner called it legally dubious. The other said he first learned about the proposal from a Syracuse.com reporter. An election expert from New York Law School put the months-long boondoggle into context. "This is not good government way to create new laws," said Jeffrey Weiss, director of the New York Elections Census Redistricting Institute at New York Law School. McMahon's proposal came more than a week after he accidentally signed, then quickly vetoed, a term limit law he meant to block. His error fueled an already fraught political battle between Republicans and the newly empowered Democrats in Onondaga County. That battle could end up in court. Democrats claim McMahon's signature makes the bill law and want to put it on the ballot. The Republican election commissioner, however, says he's honoring McMahon's subsequent veto and he won't put the term limit proposal on the ballot. In a story from Renee Fox, authorities agreed to pay $274,000 to buy out a former director's contract. The Syracuse Housing Authority agreed to pay its former executive director, Bill Simmons, nearly $100,000 plus 1 year's salary in exchange for his early retirement, according to the separation agreement that finalized his departure. In a 4-3 vote on July 2nd, the authority's board agreed to pay Simmons a lump sum severance payment of $274,146. Simmons' last day was July 10th, and his contract was set to expire at the end of July 2027. Simmons agreed to retire early after a year of turmoil over the direction and pace of the East Adams redevelopment project. In exchange, the board paid out about a year's worth of his salary, which was about $184,000. The separation agreement states SHA will not contest any unemployment claims Simmons may file, though the agency does not guarantee he will qualify for benefits. Deputy Executive Director Jalen Clifford has been appointed Acting Executive Director while the authority searches for a permanent replacement. Details about that search are still being finalized. You're listening to a reading of articles and features from the Post Standard on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Micron continues hiring as heavy truck traffic begins at the Clay site, from Glenn Coyne. After more than 3 years of study and planning, the Micron Technology chip-making complex in the town of Clay is well underway. The company broke ground in January. Earlier this month, Micron started pouring concrete, a critical step toward releasing billions of dollars in funding from the Federal CHIPS Act. This one This is the one for the program that needed to be met, said Manisha Bhatia, Micron's Executive Vice President for Global Operations. Micron could receive $25 billion in taxpayer subsidies to build the first two factories, each covering 28 acres. Neither Micron nor the U.S. Department of Commerce, which administers the funding, will say what those milestones are. Micron said it could build up to four fabs over the next 20 years. Timelines have been pushed back repeatedly since the project was announced in October of 2022, but Micron says the project is now on track. From the Investor's Edge column, Chili's parent Bucks Trends is a tasty issue for investors. Brinker International stock has generated exceptional gains since 2022, columnist Jim Burns. If you take a drive down Erie Boulevard today, you'll notice that many of its former national chain restaurants are either gone or have been replaced. Think Outback Steakhouse, Red Lobster, TGI Fridays, Pizza Hut, and Ruby Tuesday, to name a few. One national chain, however, has bucked that trend and continues to thrive both here in Syracuse and across the country, Chili's Grill and Bar. In fact, Chili's just posted its 20th consecutive quarter of positive same-store sales growth, a powerful streak many of its former and current Erie Boulevard neighbors could only dream of. Chili's is owned by Brinker International. The ticker symbol is EAT, EAT, a Dallas-based company that also owns Maggiano's Little Italy. Brinker operates 1,600 restaurants across the United States and 30 countries, most of them operating under the Chili's brand, known for its American Tex-Mex cuisine. Selling at approximately $190 per share, Brinker offers the value-conscious investor not only tasty eats, but an attractive long-term investment. For much of the last decade, Brinker was a forgotten stock, a casual dining name that traded sideways while investors chased faster-growing sectors. And that changed in 2022 when the new CEO, Kevin Hochman, took over and rebuilt the Chili's playbook around four simple ideas: better food, better service, better atmosphere, and happier employees. Indeed, since Hochman took the helm, Brinker stock has generated exceptional gains of over 350% for its shareholders. Sounds delicious. From the storefront column, contributing writers Elizabeth Duran, Annalise Knudsen, and Emily Ann Jackman. In 2022, Williams-Sonoma closed its high-end home and kitchen store at Destiny USA. Now, a new specialty shop specializing in home and kitchenware, along with specialty local foods, has opened in the former Williams-Sonoma space on the second floor. Nona and Oma's, named after Ona Angelique Ledke's mother and her mother's best friend, started in 2024 with a shop in the Crossgates Mall in Albany County. When Pyramid Management Group officials approached Ledke with the idea of opening in the Syracuse Mall 2 years ago, she wasn't ready. "We had to put it on the back burner at the time," she said, "but last December we decided to sign the contract and get ready to open this year." The shop opened last month at Destiny USA. Ledke lives in the Albany area, where she also teaches theater at SUNY Albany, but she has Syracuse connections. Her mother grew up in Syracuse, and Ledke's uncle is the former mayor, Roy Bernardi. Ledke, 48, ran two gift shops in Albany back in 2009, and one was right next to a Williams-Sonoma store. When that store closed after 2020, Ledke's 16-year-old daughter suggested they open a similar shop to fill the kitchenware niche. They started Nona and Oma's in 2022. The store sells cookware, bakeware, knives, specialty foods, including local items, electronics, and gadgets. They also have a test kitchen inside the store. "We're trying to educate folks that we aren't Williams-Sonoma because that's what they think, but we do look a lot like them." The family, including Angela, her husband Vernon, and their two daughters Olivia, 18, and Sophia, 15, run the business. Other news, Burn Dairy is proposing to build a convenience store and gas station on East Taft Road in the town of Cicero. Burn Dairy has owned the property at 6397 East Taft Road for several years, said Christian Brunel, Senior Executive Vice President of Sunburn Sales, Inc., which does business as Burn Dairy. There are four vacant homes in the property that would have to be torn down to make way for the store and the gas pumps. The $5,300 square foot store will have 7 or 8 fuel dispensers for cars and 5 diesel dispensers. Burn Dairy has other stores in the towns of Cicero, but they're both nearly 10 miles away. The convenience store chain just opened its newest Burn Dairy on July 1st at 7190 Buckley Road in Clay. In sports news, new coach Ben Lee has thousands of contacts and never stops working from Donna DeTota. Ben and Liana Lee have a standing morning date. At 6:30, they take Gus, their 5-year-old Newfoundland poodle mix, for a walk and catch up. Sometimes Ben's work schedule allows 15 minutes of conversation, and other days he could walk for a half hour. That brief morning interlude might be the last time Liana sees her husband for many, many hours. Honestly, it's just a time to enjoy each other's company, Liana said, because that's something we don't get to do that often. People close to Ben Lee, Syracuse's new assistant basketball coach, describe him as a workaholic and a man who has built his reputation on the crucial craft of networking. He knows how to talk to people, they say, understands how to motivate players, and has a keen eye for talent. He was Jerry McNamara's top assistant at Siena. When McNamara got the Syracuse job last March, he hoped Lee would succeed him as Siena's new head coach. Lee wanted the Siena job, but when the school was considering only candidates with head coaching experience, Lee read the tea leaves and realized he would not be the Saints' next head coach. So McNamara hired him. It was a no-brainer, McNamara said. Lee had opportunities at other high majors, primarily as a recruiter, but he wanted more. At Syracuse, he is still McNamara's right-hand man, but this time at a Power 5 school. The job comes with a bigger stage, higher stakes, and more pressure, and Lee wants all of it. In other Syracuse basketball news, Carmella says that SU has the financial support it needs to win, story by Mike Waters. The Syracuse University's men's basketball team has struggled to keep up with its competition in the athletic compensation era of college athletics. But the greatest player in SU basketball history thinks the Orange program can get to a place where it can compete against the top ACC teams and the nation. Think about it like a startup company that's been going for a while, Carmelo Anthony said. But now we've really got the support of what we need to do to go out there and scale this business. Anthony spoke last Tuesday on the day before the second annual Summer Slam at the Skenny Atlas home of SU booster Vinny Lobdell. Anthony's presence was to be one of the highlights of this year's event, which Lobdell said was expected to raise $1 million for SU's athletic programs. Attendance nearly doubled over the inaugural Summer Slam from 300 last year to a sold-out crowd of 500 for this year's event. I didn't really ask him for anything, Lobdell said of Anthony, who signed dozens of bottles of his signature wine and Maker's Mark bourbon that were given out to be auctioned off during the Summer Slam. He just showed up, and that's the type of guy he is. He believes in this community, his son's here, and he believes in this program. There's been speculation that the Syracuse has increased its team budget in order to bring in more talented players. Anthony said that he had a dollar figure in mind what it would take for SU to compete at a high level again, but he wouldn't provide specifics. It's a number. It's going to take a number. I've heard a lot of numbers being thrown around out there, he said, but the people that know a number, and that number has been talked about. That number has been discussed, you know, internally and behind closed doors, and the people that understand it understand that number has to be reached. In addition to raising money, Anthony wants Syracuse to be Syracuse again. I really want to see it get back to where it should be, he said. I really want to see the culture back in Syracuse basketball. In terms of culture, in recent years there have been a noticeable decline in appearances of former Syracuse players at the JMA Wireless Dome. That connection to the program's past is important, according to Anthony. It goes beyond just soliciting money from the SU basketball's alums. These are guys who understand what it takes to win on a college level and understand what it takes to develop on a college level. So yeah, it's very important to keep those voices around who've been here before and who really represent what we all represent. Taking a look at the weather forecast, well, we definitely have hit the dog days of summer with temperatures ranging in the 80s over the past week, and that's really not going to change. Tuesday, we're looking at partly cloudy skies, 83 degrees, with Monday, isolated thunderstorms and only 81 degrees. On Wednesday, partly cloudy with a chance of storms, only a 66% chance and a high of 85. On Thursday, a slight chance of storms, 84 with light showers. On Friday, partly cloudy, isolated showers at 83. And on Saturday, partly cloudy with isolated showers, but a very low chance of that and a high of 84. temperatures around the state. Albany was in the 80s as well. Pretty much everybody ranged in the 80 degree marks, with Lake Placid highs in the high 70s and also Saranac Lake in the high 70s. Around the country, even Anchorage was in the 70s, and they're expected to be in the 60s later this week, so it's a little more temperate for them. Las Vegas, triple digits. Palm Springs, triple digits. So if you like the three-digit temperatures, that's where you need to be. Phoenix, Arizona, the same. And the low temperatures around the country are actually hitting maybe in Alaska, and that's it. Everybody else is in the 70s and 80s. Around the world, Acapulco, sticking at 80-some degrees, which seems to be their year-round temperature, so that would be kind of nice if you like that hot. In London, in the 70s, and Mexico City, in the 70s. Paris, in the 80s. In Tokyo, triple digits. And the cool spot is in Vancouver, in the low 70s. Well, now that we know what the temperatures are going to be for the week, let's take a look at what's happening around the region. On Monday, Tori Amos is at the Landmark Theater and performing with a special guest, Barty Strange. And Amos performed in Syracuse last in 2007. You can find tickets at Ticketmaster, 362 South Salina Street in Syracuse. It starts at 7:30, and tickets start at $59 online. On Wednesday, Lake Street Dive returns to Beacon Skiff Apple Orchards with a special guest, The Dip. Lake Street Dive has performed often in the Syracuse area, coming to Beacon Skiff several times in the last few years, and also performing at the Syracuse Jazz Fest and the Westcott Theater. Tickets are at beaconskiff.com/events. 7 p.m. on Wednesday, the doors open at 6. It's at 2708 Lords Hill Road in Lafayette, and it's $72 online. On Thursday, Factory Stories by Harry Littell pairs contemporary photos of former Morse Chain / Borg Warner / Empower Power Transmission Factory campus with former employees' portraits and recollections. You can RSVP at southwestithaca.com/events/book. 620 South Aurora Street in Ithaca from 4 to 7 on Thursday, and the book costs $40. If you can't get to the Wednesday concert at Beacon Skiff, you can see Cole Swindell there on Thursday. He will be a pop country star. He has returned to the Syracuse often over the last decade, even donning a local Brooklyn Pickle t-shirt at his Chevy Court show in 2015. He's known for songs like Chillin' It, Ain't Worth the Whiskey, and You Should Be Here, and just released Girl Dad in the last few months. Tickets are at beaconskiff.com/events. Again, 2708 Lords Hill Road in Lafayette. The show is at 7 p.m. on Thursday. Doors open at 5, and tickets are $75 online. The 315 Thursday series brings live music, local artists, and vendors to downtown Syracuse's Hanover Square every Thursday in August. It features a rotating lineup of local and regional performers and art vendor village, with food and drinks available at nearby bars and restaurants. This week's lineup features DJ Joey D at 5, Ruha at 6, and Seven Wonders. They are fabulous. You have to go see them if you can. They're a Fleetwood Mac tribute band at 7:30. At the East Water Street in Syracuse, 5 to 9 on Thursdays in August, it is free to attend. New Jersey rapper Fetty Wap brings his nostalgia tour to the Landmark Theater, celebrating a decade of hits spanning 2016 to 2026. The show will spotlight early fan favorites like Trap Queen, 679, and My Way, and marks Fetty Wap's first concert run since his release from prison earlier this year. Tickets are at Ticketmaster, and it's at 362 South Salina Street in Syracuse, 8 p.m. on Friday, and tickets start at $40 online. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Post Standard on the Frontier Radio Reading Service. The Happy Together Tour will bring chart-topping hits from the 60s and 70s to the on-center Krauss-Heinz Theater. The lineup includes The Association, The Troggs, former Chicago lead singer Jason Schaff, Gary Puckett, The Fortunes, Ron Dante of the Archies, The Vogues, and The Cowsills. Tickets at Ticketmaster.com or in person at the Salve Bank box office at the On Center, 760 State Street in Syracuse, 411 Montgomery Street in Syracuse is where the concert will be, and it's 7:30 on Friday. Tickets start at $52 online. Folk and roots music duo Robin and Linda Williams bring their signature blend of bluegrass, folk, old-time, and acoustic country to the Night Eagle Cafe. For more than four decades, the pair have been celebrated for their warm vocal harmonies and narrative-driven songwriting. They're longtime favorites of a Prairie Home Companion and have had their songs covered by artists including Emmylou Harris, Mary Chapin Carpenter, and Tom T. Hall. Tickets are at eventbrite.com. It's going to be at 1004 Auburn Road in North Lansing, 8 p.m. on Friday. The doors open at 7:30. Advance sale tickets are $25, $30 at the door. On Friday and Saturday, there'll be a Taco and Margarita Festival at Syracuse's Inner Harbor, featuring tacos, margaritas, live performances, and fireworks. The event raises money for the La Casita Cultural Center, which supports Hispanic communities across Central New York. It's at 328 West Kirkpatrick Street in Syracuse from 4 to 10 Friday, noon to 10 on Saturday, and it is free to attend. The CNY Scottish Games 83rd year this event will be held at the Long Branch Park this weekend. Those plaid-heavy games include competitions like the Brammer Stone, the Caber Toss, the Sheaf Toss, and more. Spectators can enjoy food, culture, and music from the Highlands. Tickets at cnyscottishgames.org at 3813 Long Branch Road in Liverpool from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. on Saturday. Tickets are $20 for adults, youth $14. Towpath Day will be celebrated this next Saturday. It's an annual celebration at Camillus Erie Canal Park featuring music, food, boat rides, kids' crafts, face painting, games, vendors, raffles, and historical presentations. This year's event theme is the 250th anniversary of the American Independence. It's a family-friendly day on the historic Erie Canal towpath with free parking and shuttle service available. 5750 DeVoe Road in Camillus from 11 to 4 on Saturday and is free to attend. You can learn how to turn old paper into new paper at the Rolling Hills Campground Playground at the Green Lake State Park. This hands-on activity is open to all skill levels and is a great way to explore recycling and sustainability in a natural setting. Children must be accompanied by adults. 7900 Great Lakes Road in Fayetteville from 2 to 3 on Saturday. It is a free program with a $10 per vehicle admission. The Oswego Health Foundation will host a 5K run walk, kids fun run, and a wellness fair at the Seneca Hill Manor with local organizations, health resources, family-friendly activities, and vendor demonstrations. Proceeds will benefit Oswego Health's Care Management Program, which helps individuals navigate complex health care and social service needs such as housing, transportation, and food insecurity. The event is open to all ages and fitness levels. 20 Manor Drive in Oswego on Saturday. The kids' run starts at 9. The 5K starts at 9:30. Adult registration starts at $34. It is free for the kids. Reggae fusion band MSJR makes its Syracuse debut at Funkin' Waffles alongside regular people for a night of live music in Armory Square. At 307-313 South Clinton Street in Syracuse, 8 p.m. on Saturday. Doors open at 7. Advance tickets are $10 and $15 at the door. The CNY Folks March invites walkers to explore Marcellus Park and surrounding villages during the guided walks. The scenic park features a playground and picnic areas, and the route winds through a village just west of Syracuse. First-time walkers are welcome. It's at Marcellus Park, 2449 Platt Road in Marcellus. Runs from 9 to noon on Saturday. You sign in at the Annex Pavilion. 1 to 3 on August 9th, sign in at the Welcome Center. Adults are $4, kids 5 to 18 are $1, and a family max charge will be $9. Military veterans, $2, and if you're a first-time walker, you get in for free. Musician and humanitarian Samite will be at the Hangar Theater to perform this solo multimedia show called Resilience. He will trace his journey from surviving political violence in the 1980s Uganda to becoming an internationally recognized healer through music. Blending live traditional African music with personal storytelling, the performance is both intimate and urgent. Both shows include an extended post-performance Q&A with Samite. 801 Togonac Boulevard in Ithaca, 7:30 on Saturday, and 2:30 on Sunday. general admission is $44. If you're a subscriber to the Hangar Theater, it's $27, and students are $17, and all prices include the processing fees. And finally, on Sunday, a breakfast fly-in and drive-in. The Civil Air Patrol is holding a pancake breakfast fly-in and drive-in at Oswego County Airport. It's open to the public. The menu includes pancakes, eggs, French toast, home fries, sausage, and beverages. Free Young Eagles airplane rides will be offered to youth ages 8 to 17, weather and aircraft permitting, with a parent or guardian signature required. It's the EAAA Chapter 486 at the EAAA Building at 2326 Route 176 in Fulton. It runs from 7:30 to 11 on Sunday the 9th. Tickets are $12 for adults, seniors and veterans $10, and children ages 5 to 11, 7. Under age 5, they get in for free. This week from the CNY Inspirations column, The Blue Dust in the Bowl by Asia Shenandoah. Today, among a heap of broken dusty cinder block, I found a haven of blue, a weed to some, but chicory has been here longer than any structure we've ever built over earth. She studies tired soil and survives places we've nearly used to death. Chicory rises where the ground has been broken. Gravel road shoulders, the seam in the concrete at the edge of my construction site. Out of the gray rubble emerges a blue so improbable it feels borrowed, a color that belongs to a songbird's wing, a piece of pottery or silk laid across a dining table. Instead, she blooms beside vacant buildings and stop signs. We mow her, we spray her, we step over her without ever learning her name. Isn't it comforting to have the company of this neighbor who refuses to confuse harsh conditions with the end of her story? Her roots travel deep, drawing minerals from places other plants cannot reach. Those same roots have been roasted into coffee for centuries, from ancient Rome to France and South America. Her young leaves find their way into my salad so my brother can tell people I eat lawn clippings. The leaves are rich in vitamins. The roots store inulin, nourishing both people and hidden communities beneath the soil. Crush a flower between your fingers and you'll catch a faint earthy fragrance. You're entering a conversation with this plant that has been holding it in the ground a long time. Listen carefully. Every living thing here does something, feeding life, turning sunlight into tomorrow, happening without our attention. Maybe that's the lesson chicory offers. Not everything valuable announces itself. Today, before we hurry past another patch of blue in the dust, let's stop for a moment. Is there a neighbor we have taken for granted? Asia Rose Shenandoah is a mother, IBEW lineman, jewelry maker, and Indigenous community advocate. Raised on the Onondaga Nation, she's a member of the Tuscarora Nation of NC. Her work honors Indigenous knowledge, history, and resilience, weaving stories that reconnect people to the land, to the identity, and to each other. From the Empire page, this Adirondack's lazy river float is named amongst area's best, from Samantha House. Looking for a new way to explore the wildly beautiful Adirondacks? Well, the lazy way is literally a winner. A company that guides adventurers on a lazy river ride on the winding Hudson River near Lake George has been named one of the best in America. Tubby Tubes River Company, the guide, was voted number 7 river company in the United States by USA Today's 10 Best. Wilderness Cove in Saluda, North Carolina won the contest number 1 spot. Tubby Tubes River Company is in Lake Luzerne, about 7 miles south of Lake George, and it has been in business for more than 20 years. From Memorial Day through Labor Day, Tubby Tubes invites explorers aged 2 and older to float down the wandering Hudson River from the comfort of an inflatable tube. This relaxed, lazy river float follows a scenic stretch of clear water surrounded by Adirondack mountain scenery, 10 Best wrote in its review of Tubby Tubes. Trips include tubes, life jackets, shuttle transportation, and river guides who accompany the guests along the route. The round-trip adventure lasts about 2 hours, including time on the shuttle bus, according to the Adirondack Extreme, Tubby Tubes' parent company. The tour, which offers stunning views of the southern Adirondack Mountains, is not geared toward adrenaline junkies. The stretch of the Hudson River explored during the tour has no rapids and is 3 to 4 feet deep on average, according to Tubby Tubes. The river temperature is typically 70 degrees during the tour season. The sightseeing adventure also serves as a way to cool off on a hot summer day. Tubby Tubes advises customers to plan on getting completely wet. After tubing on the Hudson River, travelers can spend the rest of the day exploring Lake George. You can relax at Million Dollar Beach, one of upstate New York's best beaches on Lake George, often voted one of America's best lakes. Explore Lake George by parasailing or going on a steamboat cruise. Or fuel up with a meal at one of Chef and Adirondacks native Rachel Ray's favorite places to eat around Lake George. If you go, Tubby Tubes River Company is at 1289 Lake Avenue in Lake Luzerne. Tickets cost $40 for ages 13 and older and $35 for ages 2 to 12. To see Tubby Tubes hours, book a lazy river adventure, or learn more, visit the company's website at tubbytube.com. Also on the best list, Corning makes the top small towns list, story by Kelly Corbett. Corning is making headlines, and it's not just for its long history of glassmaking. The tiny southern tier city, with just over 10,600 people, is gaining national attention for its charming feel and cultural scene. It recently took home awards from USA Today's 10 Best contest, including the fourth best small town in the Northeast. USA Today praised its blend of history, culture, and local attractions. Known as America's Crystal City, Corning, New York is a small town with a big arts scene. As the headquarters of Corning Incorporated, it's renowned for its glass innovation, and the Corning Museum of Glass houses one of the most comprehensive collections of glass. The outlet also highlights the city's downtown Gaffer District for its farm-to-table restaurants, breweries, boutiques, and museums, such as the Rockwell Museum, a Smithsonian affiliate housed in the city's former City Hall. It also pointed to Corning's major annual celebrations like the Crystal City Christmas, Harvest Fest, and Glass Fest. Corning also landed at number 5 for having the best small town cultural scene in the United States. In that write-up, USA Today capitalized on the city's arts offerings, including the aforementioned Corning Museum of Glass and the Rockwell Museum, which are home to American paintings, sculptures, and other works. The publication also called the Gaffer District a hub of artistic expression. The rankings were determined through nominations from a panel of travel experts, followed by a public vote from readers nationwide. And Corning's Williams Toyota Wine Glass 5K was ranked as the 7th best 5K race in the country. For those of you that'll be staying indoors and watching the TV or going to movies, Super Troopers at 25, a quarter century of mustaches and maple syrup. The movie became an unlikely cult hit, making many times over what it made in theaters on VHS and DVD. A quarter of a century is a long time for mustache rides and syrup binges, but Super Troopers has gotten a lot of milestones out of the simple joys of friends goofing around. The comedy troupe Broken Lizard, a group of college buddies who began performing together at where? Colgate University, yes, broke through with the 2001 Super Troopers movie. It was made for less than $3 million, and it cast Jay Chandrasekhar, who directed, Kevin Heffernan, Steve Lemmy, Paul Soder, and Eric Stolhansk as a group of juvenile Vermont state troopers. The then Emmy-less Brian Cox played their cantankerous chief. Of those that remember that, now they're going to have a sequel. Broken Lizard has sometimes mocked Hollywood sequel baiting. At the end of 2006's Beer Fest, they teased a fake follow-up Poit Fest that fans have continued asked about. Similarly, Super Troopers 3 ends with a tagline for a fourth movie. We're kind of kidding, but maybe we're not. NYPD Blue made 250 episodes of their social. We can do 4 or 5 of these little cop shows, they said. And yeah, and the One Piece Manga, they've done 1,000 episodes. So we're going to do 1,000 Super Trooper movies. So I'll let you know when that comes into theaters. On the small screen, Wizards Beyond Waverly Place, the third and final season, will air its 4 episodes in their entirety starting at Tuesday at 8 p.m. on Disney. The Shards is Ryan Murphy's newest series, an adaptation of the semi-autobiographical Bret Easton Ellis novel of the same name, where Ingby Rigney stars as a 17-year-old version of the author as he attends an elite Los Angeles prep school in 1981. Adding intrigue to the story is the school's mysterious new student, played by Homer Gear, who arrives at the same time as a series of killings of teenagers plagues the city. Graham Campbell, Wendt Bessley, Evan Rachel Wood, Kaya Gerber, Haynes Werner, and Jordan Roth will also star. It'll be a Thursday at 9 p.m. on FX. You are listening to a recording of articles and features from the Post Standard on Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. On the streaming platforms, Das Boot, this is the belated American premiere of Season 2, which originally aired in Germany in 2020. MHD Choice will also air similar unseen Seasons 3 and 4 at a later date, and it begins streaming on Tuesday at MHZ Choice. Big Chicken, a fast food conspiracy. This British production hosted by comedian Mo Gilligan is like a supersize me for fried chicken. That'll begin streaming on Wednesday on Netflix. The Challenge, Cutthroat, the MTV competition series The Challenge moves to Paramount Plus for its 42nd season and begins streaming on Wednesday on Paramount Plus. Sterling Point, created and directed by Megan Park and produced by Gossip Girl team of Josh Schwartz and Stephanie Savage, is a coming-of-age drama that finds a 17-year-old New Yorker, played by Ella Rubin, inheriting her grandfather's Canadian island. Keen Raffalo, Emilio Helfer, Jay Duplass, Misi Pyle, and Jeffrey Dean Morgan will also star. It begins streaming on Wednesday on Prime Video. Alley Cats, another adult animated feature series featuring talking animals, but this one is from Ricky Gervais. He's also part of the voice cast, joined by Diane Morgan, Joe Hartley, David Earle, Andrew Brook, Tom Basden, and Kerry Goldman. That'll begin streaming Friday on Netflix. In home video and on demand, The Devil Wears Prada 2. 20 years later, Andy Sachs, played by Anne Hathaway, returns to Runway Magazine and teams up with former boss Miranda Priestly, played by Meryl Streep. They're going to try and save the publication. Emily Blunt and Stanley Tucci also return. Mortal Kombat 2, the sequel to Mortal Kombat, sees Katana and Johnny Cage joining the tournament to save the Earthrealm from the evil Shao Kahn. Pressure details the tense days before D-Day when General Dwight D. Eisenhower and meteorologist James Stagg try to forecast the weather in order to ensure the invasion's success, featuring Andrew Scott, Brendan Fraser, who plays Eisenhower, and Kerry Cogdon. And in The Gray, Guy Ritchie writes and directs the tale of an elite team of covert operatives assigned to retrieve stolen billions. Jake Gyllenhaal, Harry Cavill, and Isa Gonzalez will star. That's what's happening on the small screens this week. And to wrap up this week's broadcast, there's a column in the Empire section by Chuck D'Imperio called The Inspiring Stories of Central New York Women Who Should Be Household Names. The Central New York region boasts many women who have left a significant imprint on the history of the area and the country as a whole. We know the towering legends of the past, women like Susan B. Anthony, Matilda Joslyn Gage, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, and many others. We know their stories, but this list of women of Central New York ties may hold some names you're not familiar with. All of these women left a significant imprint during their lives, and it is fitting we remember their stories and honor their legacies. Anna Short Harrington, who lived from 1897 to 1955, gained fame as one of the actors who portrayed Aunt Jemima of Pancake Syrup fame. She was discovered by Quaker Oats representative who saw her cooking at a state fair. She was hired to portray Aunt Jemima, the corporate character for the company's pancake products. Harrington traveled the country making personal appearances and ended up in Syracuse. In the Salt City, she cooked for university students and owned a large student dormitory. She died in 57, October 21st, and is buried in Syracuse's Oakwood Cemetery. Adelaide Holly Cumming, from 1905 to 1998, was born in Willett, Cortland County, and graduated as salutatorian from Cincinnati's High School in 1922. She embarked on a 30-year career in broadcasting in New York. In 1949, she was tapped by the General Mills Company to be the personification of Betty Crocker, and for nearly 15 years traveled the country and appeared on TV for the company's food products, items, recipes, and cookbooks. America's First Lady of Food died at 93 years old on December 21st in 1998 and is buried in her hometown of Willett. A news clipping about Harrington in the Post Standard in 1954 was the story that she was born Adelaide Hoddy, born Dita Adelaide Fish, and had an interview in 1940, and that's what has the picture, next to her name. Dr. Mary Edwards Walker, born 1832 to 1919, was born, lived, and died in Oswego, where a statue honors her today. She was a legendary heroine during the Civil War, where she served as a battlefield surgeon. She was also a spy for the North. On April 10, 1864, Walker was captured by the enemy and sent to the notorious Castle Thunder prison camp in Richmond, Virginia. When she was released in a prisoner swap, Walker weighed less than 60 pounds. After the war, she was awarded a Medal of Honor by President Andrew Johnson for her courage and service to the country. In 1917, the criteria for receiving the Medal of Honor were revised to include only those who had served direct field combat, and she was ordered to return her award to the Department of War. She refused and wore it every day for the rest of her life. In 1977, her award was recertified by President Jimmy Carter. Of the 3,528 Medals of Honor given out over the last 150 years, Walker is still the only woman to have received it. Walker was also a suffragist, famous for wearing pants. She was arrested more than once for wearing clothes reserved for men at the time, including her famous top hat, according to the National Women's History Museum. Sarah Rosetta Wakeman, 1843 to 1864, grew up in Chenango County. Her large family faced crushing poverty, and she left home when she was 19. She left her home area of Bainbridge, Afton, and immediately disguised herself as a man, and she was hired on as a man with the Chenango Canal as a boatman on the coal barge. While doing this quote-unquote manly work, she met a military recruiter who was looking to get men enlisted in the Union Army. His bounty fee of $150 was all Wakeman needed to be convinced to sign up. She rechristened herself as Lyons Wakeman and joined the Army. She served gallantly with a Company H of the New York State Volunteers out of Central New York and participated in the deadly Red River Campaign in Louisiana. She became deathly ill while drinking polluted waters in the swamps and died in June of 1864 at only age 21. Wakeman is buried in New Orleans under a military-issued grave headstone that only reads Lyons Wakeman, New York State. Polly Cooper. Cooper, the birthday unknown, was an United Nation woman raised in central New York. Her name is well remembered as for her courage when she joined a rescue party traveling by foot from CNY in the brutal winter of 1778 to aid George Washington and his troops who were facing starvation while they were encamped near Valley Forge. The Oneidas were marching to join Washington as fighters and scouts, and Cooper went along bringing several hundred pounds of corn to feed the troops. When they arrived at the camp, nobody knew what to do with Cooper or her corn. The United Nations website describes the scene. When they arrived at the winter camp, the soldiers were so hungry they attempted to eat the raw corn, but were stopped by Polly, who instructed them how to cook it. The hulls on the white corn are much harder and take much longer to cook than regular sweet corn. More than likely, she prepared many different meals for the men, including corn soup and mush, sometimes adding strawberries and nuts to the mix, adding to the flavor and nutritional value of the corn. These delicious meals Molly prepared would have immediately boosted the morale of the men and was a welcome addition to the few rations they were receiving. Amelia Jenks Bloomer. Amelia Jenks Bloomer lived from 1818 to 1894, and she was born in Homer, New York. She was an activist on many fronts, including the Temperance Movement and women's rights endeavors, and she was a clothing revolutionary. She made history in 1849 by becoming the first woman in the United States to own, edit, and publish a newspaper called The Lily for Women. At its peak, the newspaper had a circulation of about 6,000 readers a month, and each issue sold for 50 cents. Bloomer championed a fashion revolution when a startling new women's fashion concept emerged around 1850. The idea was to loosen up the constriction of women's dresses at the time. Tight, corseted waistlines, sweeping, unwieldy hoop skirts, and heavy layers of underclothing were felt to hinder women in housework and societal obligations, as well as making the operation of other kinds of duties in the workforce difficult. Then, a new fashion of pantaloons emerged. This fashion saw loose-fitting clothing replacing restrictive designs. Loose pants, similar to male trousers, were preferred, with the pants gathered around the ankle. Bloomer's dictum was the costume of women should be suited to her wants and necessities. It should conduce once to her health, comfort, and usefulness, and not fail also to conduce to her personal adornment. It should make that end of secondary importance. Although she was not the first to create this new form of female fashion, she was the most ardent admirer and proponent, and hence the new outfit acquired the name Bloomer's in her honor. Bloomer is honored with a statue in Seneca Falls. The statue depicts an important moment in women's history when Bloomer introduced Susan B. Anthony to Elizabeth Cady Stanton, all three who had deep connections to Central New York. And finally, Sarah Logan Fraser. Sarah Logan Fraser lived from 1850 to 1933, and she was born in Syracuse into a family heavily involved in the Underground Railroad. Seeing firsthand the injuries suffered by those who traveled the escape route to freedom, Fraser committed her life to a career in the field of medicine. As a black woman, she broke barrier after barrier. She enrolled at State University Medical School, now SUNY Upstate Medical University, at the age of 23. Later, she became the first female to earn a medical degree from Syracuse University, the second black female to graduate with a medical degree in New York State, and only the fourth in the entire United States. In 1884, she moved to the Dominican Republic to practice medicine as the only female doctor in the country, and she also owned her own pharmacy. After she died in 1933 at the age of 83, tributes poured in from around the country attesting to her aspiring career, her breaking of glass ceilings, and her lifelong encouragement for other women to join the field of medicine. She was beloved in the Dominican Republic, where they mourned her passing with an official government-issued 9-day period of mourning with flags lowered to half-mast throughout the country. Today, two incredible life-size bronze statues welcome students to the complex at Upstate Medical University in Syracuse. One pays tribute to Elizabeth Blackwell, the first woman to gain a medical degree in the United States, and the other is a statue of Syracuse's own female pioneer, Sarah Logan Fraser. You've been listening to a reading of articles and features from the weekend edition of the Post Standard. As always, please let us know what you like about the podcast and what you don't like, and if there's anything that you would like included in the readings. Your reader has been Donna, and we thank you for listening.